This oral history is recorded with Mr. Ron and Mrs. Val Williams at their home in St. Thomas, Swansea, on the 23rd of June, 2014. The history is conducted as part of the White Rock Digital Trails project with HL funding and as part of the Connected Communities series. The interviewers are Janet and Tudor Price. So, Mr. Williams, can you start by telling me when you were born and where you were born?
I was born in number 1 Lambs Row, Foxhall.
Which year was that?
1933.
Right.
And I went to St. Thomas School at 5, and then we moved to Boney Mine then. But there was a lady in our row. She used to take me and my cousin across the ferry, because she had a grandson in the Avon, and when it was his birthday, she used to take us across, and then he'd come across, and it was our birthdays, you know. Yeah.
And do you remember the ferryman?
Yeah, Di Clark. Yeah.
So, were your family local, your parents?
Yeah.
So what did your father do? What was his work?
Oh, my father was a builder's labourer. But my grandfather, he was a foreman in White Rock at Lead and Silver Works. And that's where he... And my father used to say, the women from White Rock, from Pentacweth, used to come down and go across on the ferry and shop in town rather than go down the Midland.
And then they'd walk back up with their shopping, ring the bell, and Di Clark would take them back. And then they'd walk back up to Pentacweth after their shopping.
Also, he had a bell to call him across.
Just a shout. This Mrs. Quick, in a very squeaky voice. Come on, Di, we've been waiting here for half hour. All right, Mrs. Quick, I'll be there now.
Do you remember what you paid?
Oh, about a penny, I think it was. Yeah. About a penny, I think it was.
Yeah. So where was Lambs Row? Lambs Row isn't there now, is it?
No, it'd been... Oh, 1939, we moved up to Boney Mine.
Right.
They condemned all the houses.
There was Lambs Row.
Pleasant
Row. And Prospect Row.
Right.
And the Prospect Row came by the... Where the top ship used to be, the pub. Mr. Rosser was the landlord of the top ship.
Some of the remains of the houses are still, the brickwork is still there. Kilvey Church, it's below Kilvey Church going towards Boney Mine, and on the right-hand side where the waste ground is, right, that's where Lambs Row, below old Kilvey Road, that's where Lambs Row, Pleasant Row. Mm. And you had a standpipe outside for the water, wasn't it?
No, that was up beside the church, a pipe going into the hill with the water used to come out, you know. In the row there was two taps outside to serve about 8 to 10 people houses, you know.
So they were small houses?
Yeah, two up, two down.
How many of you there when you were a child?
My mother and father, and grandfather.
And himself, he had no brothers or sisters.
You were an only child?
Yeah.
Well, that was quite unusual.
So
what would you tell me about life in Lambs Row? I know you were 6 when you left, but...
Yeah. Well, it was a nice area, you know. There was children similar age along the row, you know, used to play in that. Yeah. And my grandfather, my mother's father, he was from Somerset. He was a wagon builder, and he came down here and he helped to make the the West Pier. Right. And he used to say they have these huge stones built to build a pier, and maybe they wouldn't fit. And the foreman would say, "Oh, leave them alone. The sea will put them back in."
So what was his name?
Harry Watkins.
The name of the brewery. Harry Watkins. Yes,
So we used to know him as Walker.
Walker.
So when you were a child, did you consider yourself poor?
Oh, we never had. I remember my father saying that during the Depression, he was unemployed for about 6 years. But they used to get occasional jobs with Aaron Thomas, you know, carrying timber from the trucks and that. We weren't well off by no means, no.
Tell him about the coal.
Well, the trucks used to come in full of coal. Well, people, they were very poor. They used to steal the coal. Well, my uncle got caught, and the police took him in, and he was sitting in the waiting room or something, and the sergeant said, "What's he in for?" "Oh, stealing coal. We'll put him in the cell." And everybody from our neighbourhood clubbed together to pay the fine for him. It came to about 20 shillings.
That's a good story. Yeah. So you went to school in St. Thomas?
St. Thomas, yeah. St. Thomas Infants.
Right. And from there to... When did you leave school?
I went to Cum School then.
Right.
And Cum School was bombed. And I was the only one who went to school the next day. And the teacher said, "Didn't you know the school was bombed?" I said, "I heard about it." I said, "But I thought it was still school." So I was sitting in their room, and I had a cup of tea and a biscuit with all the teachers.
Do you remember much about the war?
Yeah, I remember we had Anderson shelters, and where we lived in Bonnymine, a lot of them were flooded, and one family had a steel table. I remember it, a green steel table, you know. So when the bombing, they used to get under the table, but sometimes there'd be about 10 or 15 people in one, because it was all the others were flooded. And I remember during the war, in February, Kilvey Hill was covered with snow, and it was a moonlight night, and the planes going across and dropping flares. It was a wonderful sight. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. Dropping flares and that, and incendiary bombs, you know. Well, the boys older than me used to go up Kilvey Hill then and collect all the aluminium from the bombs and sell them to the ragman.
So, did you go to Sunday school or?
Oh, yeah.
Where was that?
In Kilvey Church, because my mother's mother was very religious, and she used to play the organ in the church and all.
So what was your mother's name? Her maiden name?
Watkins.
She was the Watkins.
Yes.
And her Christian name?
Lillian.
And your father's name was?
William Samuel Williams.
Any Welsh speaking in the family? Or?
No.
What about your father's brother that lived in Llanelli? Did he speak Welsh?
No.
Ron's mother had a number of sisters, and tragically, one of the sisters died, leaving Stella was about three, four?
Yeah, three.
Ron's cousin was three or four, and a six-month-old baby. So the other sister then took them in. Ron's mum died whilst he was away at sea when he was a young man, and then all the sisters then used to take turns of having the children and bringing them up, you know, as their own, so that his father could go out to work, you know.
Yes.
It was very much a community.
Yes. Oh, yeah, everyone looked after each other.
And one of his aunts had had her, she was a very good tailoress, but she'd lost her leg at 16-year-old, and her husband used to collect all the money when they lived in Lambsrow, so much a week, for the party or the Christmas
party. Six months a week for the party at Christmas time. And the ragman's cart used to take the beer only up the street about 200 yards.
Yeah.
And all the family would be there then.
Right. So, you leave school, teenager.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Oh, I went in the tin works up in Morriston. For about 2 years, and then I went to sea then after that for 12 years.
Was that the Dufferin works? Or
Dufferin. Yeah.
But he had a burn, he went behind him, wasn't it? And he had
I worked in the mills for about 6 months, but all my face was burnt, and my father made me pack it in, so I went to sea then for 12 years.
So you were rolling tin plate?
Yeah.
So you said he was Mr. Williams a behinder.
Yeah, behind the mill.
Yes.
And passing
and he had
back.
He had a bad burn on his arm, and his father said to him, that's your lot, you're not going there, you know, any longer.
He was earning £7 a week then, was good money.
Yeah. So the conditions there were poor?
Oh, very hot. You know, looking back now, I think people... Youngsters, if you could show them the way the people worked then, they'd never do it. And it was all, it's not brute strength, but knack. You know, you had to have a certain way to knack, you know.
To hold the tongs and...
To the tongs. Yeah. And I know the doublers, who had double the sheet, they rolled once. And, you know, iron first, they about 2 feet long by a feet back and forward until he was about that size. And then they'd roll him again, and the doubler would double it. They'd roll him again, double it again, until he was eight sheets. And then I started bundling mills. The shearer would cut them to specific lengths, you know.
So there was a strict seniority of who did what, was it?
Oh, yeah, the rollerman was at the top one, then the doubler, the furnace man, first helper, second helper, and the behinder. So after a while, If a vacancy came up, a behinder would go as a second helper and then work up that way.
So what sort of hours did you work?
Eh?
How long? What was the shift like?
Eight hours. Yeah.
And 5 days a week or?
5 days, yeah. 5 days a week.
And the Dufferin Works was quite a big works.
Yes. Oh, there was about 10 mills there. And you see some fellas, small, skinny blokes, and no, sometimes the mill wheel would go down, and they'd be playing pop. Oh, what's the matter with that mill wheel? And you see them, they're like skeletons, but they're good workers.
But it was the knack of doing things, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that'd be a knack. You couldn't do it with brute strength.
And Lillian, your cousin, used to split the... Yeah. Sheets, isn't she, in one place?
The shearer would cut the sheets aside, and they'd be put in banks, and then women with a lead on the glove, and they
split
them. And split them. And if it was if it was a bit resistant, they'd have a knife like a cleaver and chop. If they couldn't separate them, then they had a man who used to come around and he tried to separate them, you know.
It was hard work for women.
Yes.
And yet your cousin, she was a gentle lady, wasn't she?
Gentle. Hard women. But you know, so put a couple of sheets up on the bench for them to open, and they give you a cigarette.
Tell them about when I was bundling,
you know, let's have a go behind him. And the old fella behind, he said, I said, you used to have your pocket money, then you'd spend it all. I used to smoke then, and he'd be without a cigarette. And the behind us, do a couple of passes for me, I'll roll you one now.
He used to
roll them, and it was Franklin Shag, black tobacco. And he would inhale it once. And he'd be his head spinning.
And what about going, where you used to go in for the warm water?
Oh, that was the Manor's Man cooler. You know, when he was kids, it's a swim in the pluck. But you know, when he was young, about April or May, a couple of fine days, let's go down the pluck and have a swim. We'd go in the pluck and come out to be blue, and somebody would suggest, let's go up the Manor's Man cooler.
And
there's the bottom of the cooler, and there's a train passing there.
So they all used to do a moony for them.
those were the days.
Yes, and I mean, that water was tainted, wasn't it? You know, it must have been horrendous.
Don't go there, yes. It's
And now and again, someone would suggest, let's go over and swim in the river. Well, he'd come out, your hair be standing on end. You'd go home, your mother. You've been in the river.
So, as children, but was the river important to people, or was it just?
No, it was just there. Yeah.
And still very polluted.
Oh, yeah. All the works at Swansea Vale and all the template works up in Pontardawe, all into it, you know.
Mm.
And one of my cousins, he built a canoe, and he got up as far as Pontardawe, and there was a steel ladder on the side. Well, it must have been, hadn't been used for years. He caught hold of it, and he went in.
The ladder, down he went.
And he managed to get his canoe back and come back, you know.
I've just come back to the ferry, but do you ever remember going on the ferry? They used to use a fixed wire.
Yeah.
Do you remember that at high tide or?
Because
the river must have been quite a difficult thing to cross when the.
I think heavy
rain.
During the winter, with the flow of the river, they used to, you know, they'd use it. As they saw fit, you know, if the flow was bad, they'd use it. But if it wasn't, tide was coming in, they'd just use a hoe.
Yeah. Okay, so you're a template worker for certain, but you left that and you said and went.
Went to the Merchant Navy then.
Well, he'd wanted to join the Royal Navy and his father wouldn't let him. He said he was too young.
Are we into the war years now, or
no,
after the war?
Of course, you're 1933. Sorry, yes.
1952.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, you were saying.
No, it's okay. Val, as a young lad, he wanted to join the Royal Navy, but his dad wasn't happy about that because his mum was quite ill, and so he went to the tin works. But then when he was being burnt, his father said, no, okay. So he said, I'll sign for you to go to the Merchant Navy so that you can come out. You don't have to do a 9-year stint, like, or whatever it was in the Royal Navy at that time. And you went away at Well, we were 16 then, wasn't it? Yes, you went to sea. Your first trip was supposed to be in 6 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was...
6 months.
6 months.
So obviously you went out from Swansea?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So what was the ship? Can you remember?
The British Earl. British Tanker Company.
Tell us about life then as a 16-year-old on...
Oh, well, it was the deck boy, but he used to look after the seamen on deck, ABs, and, you know, fetch the food and clean the mess room and that, you know. And he went for an hour to learn to steer the ship.
A gopher, really.
And, you know, the bosun would teach you knots and splices and all that, you know.
Mm.
And then junior ordinary seaman in the next trip on the British Patriot. We was away 9 months, and we came back to Swansea, and we was 4 days off the Mumbles.
Waiting to come in.
You know, then there was, oh, the ship in the Queen's Dock was full. He'd come in, and he'd be on a lay-by before he went alongside.
So was they couldn't come off the boat, so he could see his home.
Yes,
yeah.
But he couldn't go and get to it, you know.
But the docks then were...
Oh.
Tremendous.
Very busy, yeah.
Yeah.
There was always ships anchored off the Mumbles, very busy. Yeah.
And what were they bringing in?
Oh, general cargo and tin plate and steel was a lot going out. Yeah. And coal. I joined the coaster once. I went down the pool, and it was near Christmas. I didn't want to go, but this fella in the pool said, it's only up to Northern Ireland, Londonderry. And he said, be back for Christmas, but be come home 8 o'clock Boxing Day. And that coaster then, it'd be under the tips, and it'd be black as a miner, and the only way to have a wash, get water, put it on the galley stove, and then take it forward. They had a room with a hole, you put the bucket in, and you try his best to wash there. So that never lasted long.
So would the crew have been mainly local men or...
No, men from all over the British Isles. Mm.
There were a couple of you from Bonnymine, though, weren't there? Hmm? There were a couple of you from Bonnymine. Colin was with you, wasn't he?
That was younger times.
Yes.
Trips after.
Yeah.
Mm. And then another time, went to Australia to load sugar, and there was a dock strike. We were there for 7 weeks.
And your last trip to sea in New Zealand, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They were loading and unloading, and all of a sudden, he shouted to this fella. What was his name, Ron?
Davis.
I
was walking up the deck, and I noticed this fella driving the winch. I said, excuse me, are you from the UK? Yes, he said. I said, you're from Swansea, aren't you? From Teedrow. Your name is Freddie Davis. He said, how do you know that? I said, I was in school with your brother Raymond. And of course
they had a party.
He used to invite us up home at home then.
So were you well paid?
No, not well paid.
Not as good as the template works, or?
No. But I think the £9 a month deck boy. And I think it was £15 a month junior ordinary seaman, and then £17 a month
AB.
Was it? Senior ordinary seaman, yeah. And then AB was £28 a month.
He was taking exams each time to further himself up the ladder.
Yeah. Right.
And he was on the cards to being a bosun then, but he left when we got married because he didn't think it was a good job for a married man.
So you take examinations where? On board or?
No, in the Board of Trade. Right.
And they were written examinations?
No, practical. More or less, you know, they ask you do certain knots and rig certain blocks and that, you know, and ask you questions about the derricks and the running gear on the ship and that.
So you would carry some document that described your qualifications?
Discharge book. I got it upstairs.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, that'd be nice to see that. Well, now. No, we'll finish this now. Perhaps that would be nice to see.
What about the Suez crisis when you were in with the Petra?
Yes. During the Suez crisis, I was on a ship in the middle of the Prince of Wales for 4 months.
Loaded with Petra?
Loaded with case Petra. But then it was all blown over, so discharged. You know, and we went to Algiers then for iron ore and back to Port Talbot. And that missed the Christmas again.
It would have only taken one spark.
It would have blown St. No, it was about four ships
there. Were four ships there, you know.
It would have blown St. Thomas off the map.
Rebuilt the city centre.
But Ron was allowed to come home every day, weren't you?
Yeah.
One of the fellas, tell you this little story briefly. What? One of the chaps, his brother was a steward on one of the liners, wasn't it?
He was a quartermaster on Queen Elizabeth.
So he came.
And he came down, and as I used to come home every night, and this fella said, "Do you mind if my brother uses your bunk?" I said, "No, carry on." And he went ashore by boat, sculling, you know. And it must have been a bit rough, but this fella's getting up to the ladder, and he caught out of the ladder. And this scouser sculling, but he couldn't keep it up. And instead of letting go of the ladder, he went
in, and he had a beautiful Crombie
overcoat.
You won't forget that.
No. So there's always humour out of it, wasn't there? You know.
Okay, so I want to come on to the next stage of your life, which is obviously when you get married. But just before that, I'm interested in any connections that your family had with White Rock in particular. So you told me that
my grandfather, he was a foreman there. And my father used to tell me that he was, if they had trouble with the Kubel or furnaces, he used to call him and he'd go and fix it. You know, very experienced he was. And he must have had an accident, and the top of his finger, and the bone was still sticking out. You know, then I suppose they just put a bandage round it and carry on. Yeah.
So was this lead that they were
involved with? Lead, yeah. Lead and silver.
Yeah.
Because there was a culvert, must have been going under the road, and going up Kilvert, behind the quarry houses. And there was some buildings up on Kilvert. Then I don't know what they used to do. It was some kind of a pickling place there. Because even when we moved to Bonnymine, we used to go up Kilvert to play and see a lot of the places around there.
Mm. Tell the gentleman about Becca.
Huh?
Becca.
Oh, this woman used to come around the houses. My father used to tell me. He used to come around the houses and correct urine. Mm. And he used to call her Becca P.
Well, not that, but they used to call her Becca. Gamma P. And she used to take it over on the ferry, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And it was going to the pickling plant.
And one of my aunties used to take one of the fellas' food over on the ferry. And she used to pay Di Clark three pence a week for back and forth.
Do you remember any people of your age? Well, let's see.
I think Ron's 80.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think when White Rock finished.
Do you remember when White Rock finished?
Oh, it was derelict a long time before it finished.
Before you remember, was it?
I can't remember. There wasn't work in there. It's just ruins.
Yeah. Okay. So, Merchant Navy, and now you're going to get married?
Yeah.
So we're in
1962.
62, yeah. Right, okay. So you're in the Merchant Navy throughout the 50s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you take me from there?
Well, my parents kept what is now called the Strand pub. My parents kept the Cornish Mount. My grandparents kept it originally, and then they were killed in a road accident, and my mother and father took it over. And I was born in Sebastopol Street, but at 3 weeks old I went back because they were rebuilding the Cornish Mount at that time. And my parents, we kept it then till 1946.
So your grandparents' names, please?
Peel. I don't know.
No.
Peel. I don't know their names. The surname was Peel. My father's name was Llewellyn, but it was his stepfather.
Right, so
P-W-L.
Okay. And your maiden name is?
My maiden name is Llewellyn.
Right. So the Cornish Mount.
The Cornish Mount, yes. My sister and I. My grandparents were from, and my mother and father were both all from St. Thomas. And, pardon me. So my parents took over the Cornish Mount, and then my father went into the Navy after war broke out. So my mother kept the pub all through the war and through the Blitz and what have you, you know. And returned, if it's things like that you want to know, I can tell you, you know. Like she turned the cellar, half was for the coal and for the beer, and the other half then she turned into a bedroom for my sister and I. And when the air raid used to go, we had what they call onesies now. It was an air raid siren suit, and down to the cellar we would go. But very often we woke up and there would be policemen, firemen, all there. My mother would be feeding them and coffees after the bombings and the raids and that, you know. When the Evening Post, there was a landmine, an exploded bomb on the Evening Post, and when they were moving that, they evacuated the whole area, but they forgot about us, so everybody was in the pub with my mother, and we were serving teas and what have you, because then you only had about 2, possibly 3 days that you could open because you didn't have enough beer.
So we're at the bottom of...
the bottom of the Strand.
Right, so is this the bottom of Green Dragon Lane?
No, further down.
It's called the Strand now.
Anchor Court. It's called the Strand now.
Yes, okay.
And we were there till 1946. My parents...
Was that a lively place? Was it full of merchant seamen? Or?
Yes, yeah. Yes, because a couple of doors up towards the end of the Strand, towards Fabian Way, there was a naval base there. First of all, there was a little cafe called Joe's, but I think they got interned. I'm not sure about that.
Because they were Italian, you mean?
Well, they were nationalities of some sort, yeah. Yes. Mm. I don't remember that, I was too young.
No.
Then Lars Knutsen's, the shipping people, they were next door. And then there was where Aces is at the moment, there was a naval depot there. And they were there through the war. So you'd have the seamen, you'd have all sorts of forces coming in. Ladies of the night. But my mother was very good. They could come in, but they couldn't do their pickups in the pub, you know. She didn't mind them coming in with an escort and having a drink, but no other things. And they used to queue in Anchor Court Lane for the pub to open, because you'd have to go around each pub to find out what days they were doing, because you'd only had 2 days, but yeah. And my uncle would be behind the door, ready to open it, right? And he got flattened against us. They were all rushed in. And it was barrels then, you know. So I learned to turn a barrel on, and the whole bar would be covered in pints, so that as the doors were open, the view was ready for them. Nobody had to wait, you know. So
Right, so how did you two meet, please?
Well, I lived in White Street then, behind the Tenby, and just off Walters Road.
Yes.
And Ron had a mate who lived opposite us, and Billy had he'd gone to sea, and it was a friend of Ron's, so they had a coming home party, and I happened to go to the party, and we met there.
Yeah, and where did you marry?
And we married in St Paul's Church, down by on St Helens Road, which is now an Indian restaurant.
So was that Leon
Atkins? Leon Atkins.
There was a small, there was a small dinghy there, and that was his recommendation. Pulled together, or
all through your life. You never don't pull one way and then the other. You must always pull together, like this boat. It won't move unless you row together.
So he had this in the church.
In the church, yes. And he was a marvellous man.
Real character, wasn't he?
Oh, really, because after we left the Cornish Mount, we took over the pub, which is now the Bond Street Club. It was called the Royal George at the time, and we were there for 2 years. And he used to come round to every pub in the Sandfields, and he'd have, with his red beret, and he'd have half a beer in everywhere, and he got told off by the church no end of times. But he said, well, if my parishioners don't come to me, I go to them. Mm. So he was extremely highly thought of in the Sandfields area, you know. He was a real character.
Yes, yes.
My mother used to talk about solve a lot of arguments, you know. They'd be arguing about this, that and the other. And they'd ask him, is this right, Mr. Atkins? Mm. And he'd put him right. And if he said it was right.
He was respected.
Oh, very well. Very much so.
Did you go to church?
Yes, I did. I went to, I was a Sunday school teacher in St Paul's. For the children, you know, just as we look at.
Yes, yeah.
I used to go to Sunday school up in Pentacweth, but I never went to church.
I used to go to Fabian's Bay Sunday school, and you'd always go 6 weeks before Easter, because so that you could go on the Whitsnout.
On the Whitsnout, yes.
You'd all go to the Midland Station and catch the train to Gleish.
The outing was from Upper Bank Station to Gleish. on the train, and I've been on the train before. Oh, wonderful experience.
Yes. Yes, and yes. Now such a short distance.
Yes, but then,
yes, incredible.
Yeah. Couldn't believe it. Ron was still
in the Merchant Navy when I met him, so... our romance was quite spasmodic, you know. He'd be home, then he'd be away, and then his last trip, well, we'd been going together about 2 years, and then his last trip was 9 months, and when he came home he said, oh, if we're going to get married, he said, I don't think it's a good career for a married man. But I didn't ask him to finish. I said, well, you know, it's entirely up to you. It was a different kind of life, because you felt you shouldn't be going out and enjoying yourself when he was away, and yet you didn't want to stay in 9 months while he was away, you know. So
you're just about to get married and you're going to change your job. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of life in general, if you compare before the war and your parents, and then you are now the principal generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, what differences, for example, if you were ill as a child, what would happen?
Well, I spent 2 years in a sanitarium in Abercrave. I was I contracted pleurisy, and I was 6 weeks in Swansea Hospital. I was a big child because I was 12 and a half pound born, so I've always been big, and nobody realised that I had pleurisy because I was such a healthy child then, you know. But I'd had pleurisy, and then Dr. Hefferman found out. He said, no, this is worse. Took me into Singleton in Old Swansea Hospital for 6 weeks. And then I was transferred to Adelina Patti's. Mm. And I spent 18 months there. And I went in when I was 3, came out when I was just gone 5. Mm. Mm. They were allowed to visit once a month. My uncle worked on the buses, so he got himself on the Brecon route so that he could jump off and come and visit me in between the month. So I was lucky.
Well, I had scarlet fever as a child. And I remember my father bringing me home on that the tyres of the buses then was solid tyres, and jumping all, it'd be bumping all over the all over the road. That's what I remember that. Solid tyres on the bus.
I think Ron's family were in a much poorer condition, although he was quite spoilt, being the only child, right? His mother absolutely adored him. And they said that, you know, he'd take a biscuit, you know, and she'd say, "Where's the biscuits gone?" "Well, you might as well take them all," she'd say to him, you know. When he came back, she said, "Where's the biscuits?" You know, and he said, "Well, you told me to take them all," you know. You couldn't be sarcastic with a child, because they didn't understand that, did they? So, but I had a better childhood, you know, more affluent then, because we were in business.
Yeah.
And during the war, I mean, it was a money-making time, you know.
And I could remember the North Dock, full of wooden lifeboats. There was a carpenter shop there, building all lifeboats, and you could walk across the North Dock, jump from boat to boat. Because we used to go, first time I ever swam in salt water was up the Partleys, and used to walk down, and rather than used to catch a bus by the middle, and we used to walk across the boats, lifeboats.
The lifeboats.
There was a firm there, forget the name now.
Mm-hmm. Right, so what sort of work did you left the Navy?
Steel erecting. Yeah.
So who did you work for?
Rees and Kirby.
Right. Who were quite a large company.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Built a lot of head frame for collieries. Mm-hmm. My cousin was a foreman there, and they used to call him Die Head Frame.
Could only happen down here, couldn't it?
Yeah. Everyone got called names.
Yeah.
Then you went to BT for 2 years, didn't you? And then Ford's opened.
Yeah.
And
that's what I finished up in Ford's.
Ford's for 24 years. Yeah. 24 years.
So that was an engine assembly, was it, or gearbox? Or
axles.
Back axles, yeah.
He was absolutely thrilled when we went in the museum.
In the museum, there's a back axle, and the part.
Show me.
the differential. He said, "I used to test then."
Yes.
So, clearly, coming into the 60s now, there's greater affluence. Things are beginning to change.
Mm. I worked in BT in the telephone exchange. And Ron was steel erecting then at the time, weren't you?
Yeah.
And then you went into BT and you were waiting, passed the exam for a joiner, and then you were waiting for that when Ford's came up.
Yeah.
Right, I'd like to talk about entertainment. But
brilliant.
What sort of entertainment? So if you go back to childhood and come through, I mean...
Dancing.
Right.
Dancing, wasn't it?
Yeah, the embassy dancing.
Ron learnt in Kilvey Hall. They used to have a dance in the Kilvey Hall, didn't
you? Yeah, Kilvey Hall. And they used to stamp around with to make sure you paid.
So, and you mentioned the embassy, so what was that?
It was the Townsman. In College Street, right on the corner, above Happy Homes.
Oh, where Burton's were.
Yes. Yeah, but before that, it was the Patti Pavilion.
And
the Patti Pavilion.
The YM.
You had the YM, the casino, and then the Mumbles Pier. So we used to dance Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. If you were going to make a date, you made it for Tuesday or Wednesday when there was no dance around. Some people used to, you could go to Town Hill, but my mother wouldn't let me go out every night, you know, although I was of an age. She just felt that home time was necessary, you know, you had to do things in the house. So, but yes, we used to go.
So dancing, the ball, Tower Ballroom, etc. The Tower Ballroom you're talking about?
Well, the Tower Ballroom, yes, but
yeah.
I didn't go there, Ron, did you? Did you go to the Tower?
A couple of times. Yeah, a few times.
I think I went once.
Yeah.
But, so this was a means of meeting girls through the...
Yeah,
this was the...
Oh, yeah.
So was there alcohol involved in any of that, or?
Not when we went to the Patty Pavilion. Well, just before I met Ron, actually. You'd go into the Patty, and the girls were always sort of 8 o'clock-ish or something like that. The boys would come in about 10, because there was no drink in the Patty Pavilion, but you had a tea room. So the boys used to do their drinking in the cricketers or whatever, and then they had to get in before 10 o'clock, otherwise you weren't allowed in. Yes. Yeah. And it was a lovely time, because when you came out, if I was coming, like, to the Cornish Mount or over to St. Thomas, you just joined in. If somebody was walking that area, you'd go to St. Thomas, yeah, you'd walk with them. You know, you may not know them, but you'd walk with them and they'd walk with you. There was a strong sense of security then, you know. They never left girls walk home on their own and things like that. You know, it was brilliant. And then the Patty closed and the embassy opened.
And the YM,
dancing in the YM.
And or years later, when we were married,
we went down to a tea dance there.
So advert for a tea dance there. I said, well, let's go and take a look. I couldn't believe how small it was. I said, this can't be. This can't be where we used to dance. She said, there's no other place. I couldn't believe how small it was.
So can you tell me, when you were working eventually in Ford's, you were a member of a trade union?
Yeah.
And that was very strong? In
the... Oh, yeah, yeah. There was... It became too strong. You know...
It was silly, wasn't it?
You get... I forget what you call them. They're looking for trouble.
Agitators.
Yeah. Agitator. They'd be on a line and they'd have an argument with the foreman or walk out. I was there for about... For 6 months once, I never had a full week's wages. And a lot of us got together, used to work 10-hour nights. And I said, I'm not coming in here to be messed about. We're going to have a meeting. And
vote to
go out. Not just get agitated, got a cob on or something, and want to go home. And that's what we did then. And it was...
Quietened down.
It's a boring job, but... is a job.
Repetitive.
Well, at the time, you were earning... Your first week's pay in BT was £8. Then it went to 12.
Yeah.
And then Ford's was £25.
Right.
So it... You know, it was a lot to think of, wasn't it?
Oh, indeed. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
But Ron had done a stint in the ICI for about a 12-month when he had done shift work. And he hated it so badly, we nearly came to a divorce over it. So when he said, shall I go to Ford's? I said, if it's shift work, you've got to decide. Because I said, in 6 weeks' time, you'd be saying, oh, I'm only there because you told me to go, you know.
So you worked at ICI in Llandoor?
No.
No, or in Alcoa, yeah.
Yes, Alcoa.
Aluminium. There for about two years. But 2 till 10, I detested 2 till 10. I'd rather work nights than 2 till 10.
It interfered with his social life.
You get up in the morning, go to work with 2 till 10, you get up and you're sitting around the house and waiting to go to work. And then I was very interested in sport, you know, if it was boxing or football on the TV, and I missed it, my face be down.
He was difficult to live with at that time.
I've heard that before. Yeah. So you say the union activity, agitation and so on, was it a political issue?
No.
Do you remember the politics of the time?
No. Sometimes a chap would come into work, you know, and he wanted to go somewhere, or somebody in the family was having a do, you know, and he'd cause a stir just so that they could walk out. Mm. And it was a case of one out, all out then, without taking the vote. But then when they voted...
And a couple of us got together and said, if you walk out, I'll do your job. And they started to second thoughts about it then,
you know.
And we used to have a meeting then, show of hands, you know, it calmed down then. But about 6 months, I never had a full week's wages.
No.
And they went on strike at one time, wasn't it? And it was
9 weeks.
15 weeks?
Huh?
15 weeks, wasn't it?
Well, I thought it was 9.
Oh, it could have been. But Ron had an accident at the time. He'd hurt his back. and he was in hospital. Now, with Fords, they used to give you a Ford benefit if you were on the sick, and a lot of the boys used to, you know, really take advantage of it, because you'd get that on top of your pay. And they'd go back to work before the 10 weeks was up, so they wouldn't be in, they'd be in compliance all the time. You know, they, I mean, all walks of life do some sort of fiddle, don't they, you know?
Fiddles, yeah.
But he happened to be in hospital at the time, so they stopped all benefits while the strike was on, and then you had to prove at the end of the time that you had been ill or that you had been. So I had to send everything from the hospital to them so that we had no money coming in for those 9 or 15 weeks, whatever it was, you know.
So, we don't need to mention this address now on this tape, because it'd be better not to mention the address and the number on the tape. So how long have you lived here?
1977. 77. August Bank Holiday Saturday.
Yeah, and how would you describe the community?
Wonderful. Brilliant. Wonderful, wonderful.
If I won the lottery, I'd be loath to move from here. It's so handy, it's so near town, you can walk into town and community, you don't get no trouble. Excellent.
We go to the marina nearly every day, we walk around, you know. I mean, okay, we have a coffee, whatever. And people laugh at us because we know every coffee shop going. And they say, oh, you know, why don't you take a flask or this? And I said, look, this is what we worked 50 years for, to be able to do this, you know.
But you've mentioned how in earlier times communities were very close.
Oh, very close.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And you talked about girls walking home at night together.
Yeah.
And so how would you compare the people you now live with, this community, with what you remember in...
Well, St Thomas is one of the very few communities still existing. I mean, when we moved here in 1977, wasn't it? We had lovely neighbours. We had a dear old lady next door. Unfortunately, she was renting the house. And she was the sort of woman, you know, that cleaned her brass because the home help was coming. You know, the first year that we were here, as I say, Ron had suffered severely with his spine. He'd had disc problems and what have you, and he was laid up. And we had a tap at the top of the garden for, you know, for to feed the greenhouse, and it leaked. So his cousin came down and fixed it, and he said, you use this? And he said, no. Well, he said, I'll cut it off. So he cut it off at the bottom here. We did not know that our pipe fed her house, and she was still using the back toilet right at the end of the garden.
Everyone in the street had a grant to take the toilet from the back
inside,
down to
the
house, but she was the only one who wouldn't have it.
And she wouldn't allow her landlord. Mind, she was only paying something like 10 shillings a week rent. But unfortunately, for about 3 months, right, she had no water for her toilet facilities.
And,
we don't know how she managed.
And her landlord was a fireman. And I went out the back, and I see these fellas, you know, look like police uniforms. Digging, I thought, what's going on here? And the fella said, I said, what are you doing? Oh, we're looking for the pipe for Mrs. Williams's water. Well, they eventually traced it to our back. We'd cut it off.
We had no idea.
And another time, the snow was about 18 inches deep, and I was coming out. I cleaned her front and ours. And she was going to the hairdresser. I said, Mrs. Williams, the hairdresser won't be open. Oh, I got to go. So she was in her 80s. Eh? Come on, I'll walk down with you and walk. Gets to the hairdresser, shut. I said, I told him.
And she said, well, who put all this snow on the ground by her? And he said, I did. He said, I cleared it all for you so you wouldn't have to walk in it, you know. She was a funny lady, but she was very sweet.
Well, the rest
of the old people, older people then, they were very community-minded, you know. If we were going in, if I was in work and Ron was working, my neighbour two doors down at the time, they had a key because they used to look after a little girl that lived here previously. She'd come and take my washing in. it would be folded, it would be looked after, or there was a strong community.
Never told him. They had the key to the house, and Val and I'd be working. Say she had washing on the line, they'd come in and take it in.
You know, very good.
Oh, ex. I can't speak highly enough of this place.
And you mentioned that when it snowed, people would clear the whole
street.
Yeah.
Ron would go and get milk and bread for any of the older people at that time. You know, I mean, we're talking 20, 30 years ago, you know, which is a different age group then. I mean, now we hope somebody would go and get it for us.
Well, yeah. Okay.
No.
Well, this is all very interesting.
I hope we haven't, you know, taken off
your... It's excellent. It really is. I'm looking now to say, really, well, as you look back in your life, I mean, what would you say was the most difficult time that you had?
I wouldn't say there was any difficulty.
Okay.
No, always had a job, and I wouldn't say it was any difficulty.
I think when your mum was ill, it was hard for you,
wasn't
it?
Oh, yeah.
If I asked your father the same question,
what do you think he'd say?
My father,
being a local pub, and someone mentioned the good old days. He said, what are you talking about, good old days? I was on the dole for 6 years. I couldn't get... there was millions around the country like me. Don't tell me about the good old days, he said, when he used to feel... Have you ever been angry? And he'd lay the law down to him, you know.
Mm.
You know, he used to say it.
And his father was a labourer with a...